I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the Second Tier Podcast. I'm Ryan Dilks and I'm joined by the letter between Y and I on your keyboard to my letter between U and O. It's Justin Peach.
Good day to you, Ryan.
You're looking at your keyboard now trying to work it out, aren't you? Hello, Justin. Hello, how are you? You all right?
I'm fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. That trend on social media has absolutely destroyed social media for me, if Elon Musk didn't do that already.
Yeah, it's garbage, isn't it? Utter garbage. Makes absolutely no sense in pretty much 95% of the occasions that I've seen it. Justin, would you like to start off proceedings today with a quote from the Book of Warnock?
We may as well. We've had some rocky ones, but, like, you know,
yeah. we can. Some slightly misogynistic ones, but yes. We move. Can you give me a page number, please?
A page number? How about 87?
87. Good age. all right. So this one is from when he was Cardiff manager and he got banished to the stands against Reading. He said, "They said I'll take you to the director's box. And I said, are you joking? This is Reading. I'm not going anywhere near their fans. I said, I'll watch it on my phone, but I couldn't get 3G in the dressing room. I ended up going in the TV section with a few of the guys. And when we got the first goal, they shut off. I saw the second goal and obviously celebrated running around the little room on my own." That's nice.
Right. Yeah. What's wrong with Reading fans?
Well, Neil Warnock's clearly got an issue with him. Would you like to hear another one? This is about Paddy Kenny jubilantly celebrating the Blades winner in front of Hull's fans. Neil said he didn't incite the crowd. We plan to report the 4,500 people who called him a fat bastard. That's a good one.
Yeah, there we go.
We have had some dodgy ones recently, but that one makes up for a lot of the dodgy ones we've had in recent times. Welcome to the number one championship podcast, Second Tier. Thank you for joining us wherever you are. Justin, you won't bloody believe it, but the championship season finishes in a week and a half, so every game now is absolutely bloody massive, and that was definitely the case in midweek. We've got three games for us to talk about here today, two of which have massive implications on the promotion race, so we'll talk about that very shortly. We'll also talk about some of the news from the past couple of days, including Tom Cleverley being made the interim the permanent boss at Watford now, which is very exciting. So we'll talk about that and another story as well, which I'm not looking forward to talking about. But let's kick things off with some of the action, Justin, from the past few days. And we'll begin with the game from Tuesday night. Leicester City 5, Southampton 0. Enzo Maresca's side taking one giant leap towards the Premier League. And considering this was shaping up to be a key game in the promotion race, Justin, I could not believe how much of a demolition this ended up being.
It's quite astonishing, really, wasn't it? Because especially after how nervy the game against West Brom was for Leicester, for them to go out and absolutely destroy Southampton the way they did, it's incredible. And we've not seen a Southampton side collapse as quickly as they did since sort of early September. And yeah, they really felt it, didn't they, Saints? So yeah, this was a wicked game from a Leicester perspective, and one that would, you could finally turn around and go, actually, they do want to go up, they do want to get promoted, and it's about time we can say that.
Yeah, it was a bit of a strange game, because every time I was watching, Southampton had the ball. And that doesn't very much happen in Leicester City games, where the opponent has much more of the ball than this. So it was a bit interesting that they decided to change tact and be a bit less selfish with the ball, if you will.
Yeah.
But look, Leicester have been so wasteful in front of goal recently, and this was like them making up for all their wastefulness in one go. It was Leicester at their best, really. They haven't been near that level much at all in the past couple of months, but this was really, really impressive. And as I say, they didn't have much of the ball, but they certainly made the most of it when they did. They were massively helped by Southampton parting like the Red Sea on multiple occasions. Saints were so poor at the back. But look, Leicester were excellent and completely outclassed one of the best sides in the division, which says a lot about how good they can be on their day. It's just, unfortunately, we haven't seen that day on many occasions in recent times. At the start of the show was 20-year-old Abdul Fattaro, scored a hat-trick and set one up. He's someone I'm a big fan of, Justin. I think he's a real, real talent. What about you?
Yeah, he's been fantastic for Leicester, especially probably, I don't know, since sort of November onwards, he's been really, really good. And it's quite incredible that he's still just 20 years old. Also quite incredible that he attempts a somersault after sort of 25 minutes. I feel like it's a celebration that only deserves to be shown in the last 10 minutes of a game. I don't know about you.
He's a very impressive somersault, though, isn't he? He did like a backflip while also moving forwards.
Yeah, yeah, incredible, incredible.
It's like a shooting star press from WWE.
Yes, he defied physics several times. Obviously, his second goal as well was physics defying. But yeah, he's been sensational, and he was incredible in this game. He took his chances. He had as many shots in this game as Southampton did, which I don't know, tells you how maybe wasteful Fattaro was or how poor Southampton were. But yeah, he was great. I mean, what interested me as well, actually, is Enzo Maresca went full Pep Guardiola and talked him down after the game, suggesting he's still got a lot more to work on. But this was a wonderfully clinical performance from him. His movement for the first goal as well was superb. And yeah, it's good that he's hit form with two games to go, three games to go.
Yeah, well, Maresca said after the game that he's going to be on the bench for the final two games because he doesn't want him to get carried away. Which is
You need to get promoted, Enzo. Just play him.
Yeah, he's just bringing him back down to earth with a bump into. But I'm a real, real fan of Fattaro. I think he's been Leicester's best signing of the season. And I say that considering they spent a lot of money on the likes of Winks, Cody, Cannon, Mavadidi. There's probably a couple of others I'm forgetting there. They only got Fattaro on loan. And I know there will be fees and wages that come with that. But he arrived with very little fanfare and has arguably had the best impact out of all the players I mentioned there. Loves running at players. He's got 12 assists for the season now, which shows he has an end product as well. So for him to be just 20 as well, he's got bags of ability and loads of potential. And I'm sure Leicester would love to get him on a permanent deal in the summer because it's a bit interesting what their situation with him is. It's been reported that they have the option to make the deal permanent, or it will be made permanent if they get promoted to the Premier League. It's one of the two. However, because of their ongoing embargo and factors off the pitch, we're not really sure whether he will be staying at Leicester next season or not. But if that is the case, I'm sure he'll be attracting plenty of interest from around Europe because it looks like he's a true talent. What do you think, Justin? Do you think he's been their best signing of the season?
I think with the ones you've mentioned, I mean, Matt Hobson's been good as well in goal, but we don't like to talk about goalkeepers too much. But I think in terms of impact that they've had at Leicester, I mean, Steffi Mavididi has been fantastic, but he had a real sort of drop off in form, probably mid-January to mid-March, it feels. But you know, you can't deny him how good Fattaro's been. He's been fantastic, and I think he's really been able to shine over the last few weeks when quite a few players have been poor. So, yeah, it's hard to disagree with it.
Yeah, really, really good player. Well, it's a huge result for Leicester City in terms of their promotion. They're now just one win away from securing their place back in the Premier League with just two games to go. But they'll also be promoted if Leeds lose either of their final games. So they are nearly there, Justin Peach.
Nearly there. Ooh, how many times have we said that? How many times have we said that? I think what's really impressive, especially about this game, in isolation, I think it's the first time in about 8 weeks Leicester have felt convinced that they're going to go up. They just look comfortable. They looked assured. And as I said, it's the first time in a long time it felt like they knew they could do it. You know, you don't play with the confidence and swagger like they did, especially after that second goal went in, without believing you are top dog. They were really, really good, and they looked like a promotion winning team, and we've not been able to say that very often since the end of January. And I think that's a huge thing. Look, they have been incredibly poor, and they have somewhat thrown away a huge potential of a record-breaking season. But they've won 30 games this campaign. It's been a fantastic season for them. Just sadly, they won't be remembered for one of the great sides, but they're nearly there.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're meaning there, Justin. It's obviously a big moment for Leicester getting this win against Southampton. And we've been saying a lot recently how if they failed to get promoted, it could set the club back years. So it makes the impending promotion all the more important in Leicester City's general history, because it could have really been a real butterfly effect moment. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, they should have been promoted weeks ago, shouldn't they? They were 17 points clear at one stage. Imagine saying to a Leicester fan at that stage that you wouldn't get promoted until, officially anyway, until the last couple of games of the season. They'd be thinking, what? How's that work then? So the fact they nearly messed it up, I don't think I'm being harsh here. It does take the gloss off the achievement, doesn't it?
Yeah, but the thing is, they could still end up with 100 points. If they win the next two games, they could still hit 100 points, which is an incredible season. But it is the gloss taken off of it. Maybe they set their standards incredibly high and they set the expectations high for everybody else and how good they were. But they have lost 10 games. It's not very often a title-winning side loses 10 games. But it's also incredibly rare that a title-winning side wins over 30 games. So
we were talking about them being one of the best sides we've ever seen at Championship level, even being the best side. But now, when you consider that they've got one of, if not the strongest squad in Championship history, as well as one of the biggest budgets, the fact they won't be getting over 100 points is actually a bit underwhelming. It means they've just met expectations, really, doesn't it? They haven't exceeded them or got promoted in style. They were tasked with getting promoted, and now they're probably going to do that.
Yeah, I think.
I don't think I'm being harsh here, am I, Justin?
No, I don't think you are. I think it's one of those things where I think most Leicester fans, they'd have gone through periods this season where they'd have thought, oh Christ, right, we should have done a lot better here. And there'll be games where they'll come away and thinking, oh, how have we lost that? Why have we thrown that away? And to some extent, the season was almost thrown away. And if you get a title winning team who boasts the, I would say, wealth with, you know, with
the, it is wealth, Justin. We talk about a squad here which is worth nearly £200 million.
Yeah, and they'll probably have the biggest wage bill in the Championship as well.
Oh, yeah.
Or probably one of the biggest wage bills we've seen at this level. So, with that carried wealth, albeit not so much now, or not being able to spend so much in the future, it should have been a much, 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 much more impressive season.
Yeah, yeah. At some point, maybe we'll have a chat about how we think they'll do in the Premier League, assuming they get there. But we'll wait until they're officially promoted for that kind of discussion. But look, a really poor evening for Southampton. Russell Martin actually apologised to the fans afterwards. He said, for it to end 5-0 is madness, really. We started the second half well, but we defended pathetically after we went two goals down. The players that want to fight and care the most and run the most will play. He kept getting badgered about it by the Sky reporter after the game, which led to Neil Warnock saying he would have chinned him if he was Russell Martin. Never change, Neil. Well, it's now killed off Southampton's automatic promotion hopes, so they can look ahead to the playoffs now. Also, pretty much guaranteed to finish fourth, as I did say a few months ago. You know, too good for the rest of the league, but not as good as the top three. That's just what Southampton are. They're in the Southampton zone, aren't they, Justin? But the thing is, the fact that they're probably going to finish fourth means they, of course, can't have a say on who they'll be facing in the playoffs in a few weeks' time. And therefore, it's effectively going to be decided for them. So with that being said, Justin, who would you prefer to face if you are a Southampton fan? Norwich or West Brom? Obviously, Hull still have an outside chance as things stand, but it's more than likely going to be Norwich or West Brom. So which one would you choose out of those two?
I mean, judging how mentally weak this Southampton side looked against Leicester, it could get really ugly for them in the playoffs. Norwich boasts a lot of attacking quality, so much attacking quality that, I mean, Wagner as well, you know, is tactically, I think the issue here for Southampton is both Wagner and Corbrand are tactically astute managers. They know how to set their teams up not to lose. And that, I don't think that's necessarily a good thing for Southampton as well as that. They both like to play on the counter. So these aren't comfortable, these aren't nice games on the menu here for Southampton. It is not an easy walk in the park, which goes without saying. That being said, if you wanted to face one of the two sides, you want to face the one that's out of form, and West Brom are out of form, but you know, Southampton have lost back-to-back games, they're reeling from a 5-0 defeat. Are they in form? No. It's not a great period for them. So I think the best way to phrase it actually is to see that the side that I would least like to play against is Norwich. You know, I prefer to play Hull if they get in, and I prefer to play West Brom if they remain in.
Yeah. Well, I think if you asked me a few months ago, I would have said West Brom would be the harder game, mainly because they're a good side, but I thought they would be quite good at frustrating Southampton. But West Brom's recent form is making me doubt that now. But also, Southampton have beaten West Brom home and away this season, while they could only draw with Norwich on both occasions. So I think that's a big factor. So if I was a Southampton fan, I would definitely prefer to face West Brom. However, looking at the remaining games in the current form, I think they're more likely to play Norwich, which I think is going to be a tricky game for Southampton. You're right. Looking at their last two games, I mean, completely imploding against Leicester and then having a bit of a mini implosion towards the end against Cardiff as well. It's not encouraging for Southampton heading into what's going to be the three biggest games of the season, potentially for them. Norwich have the tools to hurt you, don't they? If Gabriel Sarr, exactly. Josh Sargent, etc. are on form, they will punish Southampton and their lapses, particularly at the back. So, yeah, I definitely wouldn't want to face Norwich. And I think that may be the most likely scenario for Southampton if things pan out the way we think. Just then, let's take a quick break. After that, we'll talk about a crazy game at the Riverside on Monday night. And also Tom Cleverley being made the permanent manager at Watford.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back to the second tier podcast. Let's talk about two of the other games in the Championship that have happened since we last spoke. And we'll kick things off with Leeds, who got their first win in four games by beating Middlesbrough 4-3. A crazy game on Monday night, wasn't it? Both teams just lost all ability to defend in this one, Justin.
Genuinely one of the most bizarre games I've watched, probably this season, probably over the last few seasons. It was a proper blink and you'll miss it fixture because something was going on all of the time. Just the array of goals that was scored. Latte Laff's belter, Somerville scored a belter as well, Bamford nicking one in, Latte Laff's header, which was just like, what is going on?
That was such a good header, by the way.
It was, but it was one of those where it's just like, huh, what? Yeah. Like as a potential you know, them getting back into it, Leeds fans must have been thinking, oh, for fuck's sake, here we go. Because no way should he have got it in, but it was such a unique way of scoring. Yeah, it was a bizarre game, and where as you say, yeah, both teams lost the ability to defend. But I think as a neutral, you want that. Obviously, as a Leeds fan, no, you don't want that. You just want a nice, clean sheet, 1-0 win, take it back to Elland Road and keep chipping away at getting into that second spot. But no, we got absolute bonkers football.
Yeah, we did. It was a funny game, but also incredibly entertaining. And it seemed like each time either side went forward, it looked like They could score. And look, you don't usually get games like this so late in the season, particularly involving a team who has so much on the line. But I'm glad we did, because it was great. And Leeds were properly forced to hold on right towards the end, weren't they? But they valiantly did hold on. And needless to say, it was a brilliant attacking performance from Leeds. I thought Crescentio Somerville was absolutely exceptional. Willie Nonto was really, really good as well. So, you know, going forwards, they looked back to the Leeds we all know and love. Very open at the back, which is something we've not said too often with them this season. I think Ilan Meslier in particular didn't cover himself in glory for any of the goals, and he's not been great since the last international break. I think that is a bit of a worry for Leeds heading into these final two games. It's funny because Leeds conceded as many league goals in this one game as they did in 13 games between the 1st of January and the 17th of March. And Middlesbrough really put them to the sword on a number of occasions. Emmanuel Latelaf was sensational. So, look, it's difficult to say it was a particularly convincing victory from a Leeds United perspective. But as we've been saying a lot recently, at this stage in the season, doesn't matter how you win, it's just about getting the win. And that's what they did eventually. So it leaves Leeds second in the table, 4 points behind Leicester. They're 1 point ahead of Ipswich, who have a game in hand. So it looks most likely to be a straight shootout between Leeds and Ipswich for second place, Justin, at this stage. Mm-hmm. Here is a question for you, though. Considering Ipswich are a point behind with a game in hand and the remaining games, whose position would you prefer to be in? Ipswich have to travel to Hull and Coventry. Then they're at home to Huddersfield on the final day. Leeds go to QPR on Friday and then face Southampton at home on the final day. So with that being said, whose shoes would you rather be in, Justin?
Quite credibly, I think Leeds have got the easier games, if you look at it as plainly as that. If Southampton, if they play anywhere as... they won't play anywhere as bad as they did against Leicester, but if they did, then yeah, Leeds will score a hatful of goals because they've got a lot of attacking potential as well. And they're going to want to sit back and hit Southampton on the counter-attack. And then QPR, you know, if their season's wrapped up by then and everything's comfortable, then yeah, look, you know, it won't be actually, but it's because it's the next game. But yeah, they don't have as much pressure on them as Huddersfield do. You've got Hull going into trying to get into the playoffs as well. Ipswich have got some tricky fixtures, which is the awkward thing there. So I think from that point of view, maybe Leeds, you'd want to be in Leeds' shoes. But at the same time, you know, Ipswich have got a game in hand. They're only a point behind. Is that a nicer place to be? Maybe. But they're doing the chasing, and the chasing is not always fun. Southampton are a very good example of that.
Yeah, I think Leeds just edge it, but it's close. I think the fact they've got a better goal difference is significant, and it may end up being a deciding factor as time goes on. I mean, it essentially means Ipswich have got to win that game in hand, because if they don't make the most of it, it leaves Leeds in the driving seat. And look, Leeds facing Southampton on the final day, I think that will be a tough game, even though they got thumped by Leicester on Tuesday. Although Southampton may think, I'd rather face Ipswich than Leeds in the playoffs. So if they beat us, it's not the worst result in the world. And as we've seen with Peterborough down in League One this week, it's not completely, you know, unusual for teams to rest players just before the playoffs, because they're obviously so massive. From an Ipswich perspective, I think that Huddersfield game on the final day may end up being a gimme, because there's every chance that Huddersfield will be down at that stage.
That's true.
But it's got to be said, Hull and Coventry away are two very, very tough games, even though Coventry don't have anything to play for now. So, yeah, we'll see. It's setting up to be a mouth-watering week and a bit ahead, and I'm all here for it. But if you're asking me the question, whose shoes I would rather be in, I'd probably just say Leeds United, but it is very, very close. A quick word on Middlesbrough, Justin. They're officially now joining us again in the Championship next season. How would you summarise their season? A bit of a weird one, I think, isn't it?
It is. I think you've got to take into a lot of context. A little bit like Coventry, actually. They lost some key players. you know, Chuparapkum Akpom was a huge loss. Obviously, division top goal scorer last season, and they lose him. They've got to replace him. They've got to reinvest that money into the squad, put the money back in squad. A lot of loan players: Cameron Archer, one of the Ramseys. Can't always forget which one it is. Jacob Aaron, but you get the point. Yeah, you lose a lot of quality when your loan players go back to the parent clubs, you don't replace them, and that was the case. And in addition to that, they signed a boatload of players who are only just. It only just feels like they're finding their feet. Like Latte Laff, for example, feels like he's only just finding his feet. Had so many injuries. You know, how many injuries did they have at one point defensively? You know, it was ridiculous earlier on in the season. So I think with all of that context, I think their season has been pretty decent. But they might see not getting into the playoffs as a bit of a negative, but certainly one of those scenarios where you think, well, maybe we could have done a little bit better.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, Justin. I know what you're saying. I think Coventry are a good comparison because, like Coventry, I thought Middlesbrough might build on last season. But also, like Coventry, you have to keep in mind they've lost their best players from last season. So they have been really hampered by inconsistency all season. They have had some cracking results, like, for example, they've done the league double over Leicester, which I don't know if anyone else has done that this season, but there can't be many teams who have done it. They've also picked up just 1 point from two games against Rotherham, though. So I think that sums it up perfectly, how inconsistent they have been. But in fairness to them, they have been incredibly unlucky with injuries. Loads of players picking up long-term knocks. I'm just looking at it now, like Hayden Hackney, Darren Lenihan. I could go on. There's been quite a few key players who they've been missing for long spells. At the same time, it's interesting looking at their XG, because attack-wise, only the top four have a better XG than Middlesbrough this season, which I find pretty remarkable, but that shows they're creating chances. It's not a problem at all. It's putting them away. And as time goes on, Emmanuel Latte-Lath, I mean, he's really struggled early on, but he has been unbelievable in the last couple of months. So that's promising heading into next season. And look, there's a lot of players I really rate there too, like Finn Azaz, Matt Clark, Dan Barlassa. These are players I would sign if I was in charge of Middlesbrough. If they get the likes of Lewis O'Brien back next season as well, that'd be excellent. So look, I think it has been a bit of a disappointing season for Middlesbrough, but there's loads of reasons to be encouraged for next season, particularly if they have better luck with injuries and, you know, manage to retain the core of the squad that they've got here. And I think it's also encouraging with Michael Carrick at the helm, who's still a manager I rate highly, despite this season maybe not living up to the expectations that I think many people would have had for them heading into it. And the final game from this week, Justin, it's coincidentally two of Ipswich's upcoming opponents playing on Wednesday night, Coventry v Hull. It finished 3-2 to the Tigers. Beating Coventry in normal time isn't for everyone, is it, Hull fans? It's a shame, really, for Hull that they had that spell around March where they failed to win in six games. They dropped so many silly points in that time, and they've since won 17 from an available 21. So if any of those games from that winless run were a victory, they'd be sat here right now salivating at their top six chances, wouldn't they, Justin?
Well, yeah, they'd be well in there, wouldn't they? It was a strange run as well, wasn't it? And maybe one that deserves a little bit more scrutiny than what they've had based on the quality that they've got in attack. I think what the main element that's missing that can be the key difference in those games is a reliable number nine. If I was to dissect it a little bit, Liam Delap's been unfortunate with injury this season. Billy Sharp's just old. Did think that was an odd signing when he came in, and he's proving to be the case. Aaron Connolly's scored 8 goals this season, but he's only started 13, for example, so he's not a trusted, reliable source for a number nine for Hull. So I think that's been a key downside to them is having a reliable number nine who can put chances away to wedge those tight games that ultimately contributed to I wouldn't say a poor run of form, but a run of form where they needed wins, not draws. So I think there's some solid foundations here, and obviously Hull is still within a shout of the playoffs, but they would be in the playoffs if one of those games in that winless run was a win, as you said.
Yeah. Well, you're absolutely right, and you know, as things stand, this victory keeps alive their hopes of getting a playoff place, but it's very slim. It's really, really quite slim. So what they would essentially have to ask for is because their goal difference is inferior to Norwich and West Brom, so they would have to get at least 4 points from their final two games, and they're facing Ipswich at home and then Plymouth mm-hmm. away. So not ideal. And then they'd need Norwich or West Brom to at most fail to win either of their last two games. So it's very unlikely. But look, they've still got something to play for with a couple of games to go, which is at the least they'd ask for at this stage, I suppose. So yeah, that's good. But
yeah, it's good season.
It could have been a lot better, couldn't it, if they didn't have that poor run around March time. Not too surprising that Coventry failed to win this one, considering they're still on the come down after the FA Cup semi-final at the weekend. We had just finished recording Sunday's episode when that game kicked off, Justin, so this is our first chance to mention it. Probably missed the boat a bit here, but you know what? Let's give them credit. They did the Championship proud, didn't they?
They did. They flew the flag and they were fantastic. And day job, I work with a lot of Americans and they were oozing over Coventry because this was a big game from a United perspective. And that's where the eyes are going to be. But they were surprised at how good Coventry were. They absolutely fell in love with the Sky Blues, which again is a testament to Coventry and how good they were and how valiantly they fought back from a 3-0 deficit. Come on, like that's hard enough in the Championship, let alone against a team boasting the quality their Man United boast. And I think they deserve a huge amount of credit taking it to penalties. Arguably, you know, that VAR decision to rule out Ellis Sims as not Ellis Sims. Was it Ellis Sims who scored?
It was Hadji Wright. Well, Hadji Wright was offside.
Ellis Sims hit the bar later on. It was just there was a lot going on in that game. Yeah. But I think that's how close they were to taking Coventry to the final. They were a VAR decision. They were millimetres away from it, which is on both occasions, actually, on Ellis Sims' miss and a disallowed goal. So, an incredible, incredible day and game for Coventry, and hopefully they don't take it to heart too much and they can go again next season.
Yeah, well, if you look at it based on, well, maybe not current form because they've lost three in a row now, but up until last month, Coventry were one of the best teams in the division. And that's why it's a bit surprising, really, that they are now going to definitely miss out on the playoffs with two games to go. Because they're a really good side. They're a really fun side to watch. They've got some very, very good players. But unfortunately, that slow start to the season really, really cost them. And if they didn't have that, they'd be comfortably in the playoffs, maybe even casting one eye towards the top two. Who knows? But they're a really good side. And I think... we've said it before, but they're a side to certainly keep an eye on heading into next season because this shows what they can do. And I think it also shows that, you know, in terms of the quality gap between the Championship and the Premier League, there isn't a whole massive difference there. It's just the resources and the financial side of the thing where the difficulty lies. And that's why we are currently in a position where we still could see three newly relegated sides getting promoted and the three newly promoted sides getting relegated. So that's the real issue there. But in terms of talent, there's so much here in the Championship. And I think Coventry made a really good example of that in that FA Cup semi-final. Anyway, let's go on to some of the news from the past few days, Justin. And we'll start off with this from Cardiff City. They've filed a complaint against French side Nantes, claiming losses of more than £100 million. It's because of the ongoing saga between the two clubs regarding the death of Emiliano Sala in January 2019. The clubs say a figure of £104 million has been estimated after an in-depth analysis by a legal expert. Last year, Cardiff said if Sala had been able to play, he would have inevitably have scored goals between January and June 2019, and Cardiff would have remained in the Premier League. It would be unrealistic to think that he would have not scored any goals. Cardiff's lawyers have taken that analysis and filed it at the Nantes Commercial Court in Western France, which gave the French club until the 23rd of September to respond. Nantes said, "We'll take the time to study these new voluminous documents and these figures." Justin, we've spoken about the Sala saga several times on this podcast over the years. I can't believe it's still ongoing. This squabbling between these two clubs is still going on.
Yeah, it's quite credible and quite uncomfortable, really. Going back to the argument that's based on, it's a very loose one. There's no guarantee that any player will score goals in the Premier League. There's no guarantee that those goals would have kept Cardiff in the Premier League either. You know, there's a lot of hearsay here. And as I say, it's astonishing, really. It's still ongoing. It's something that needs to be put to bed for Emiliano Sala's family, for the club's sake as well, because it just looks incredibly silly that this keeps going on and incredibly heartless, and there's no emotion involved. And the valued loss of 104 million is nothing compared to the loss that the Sala family experienced. So, yeah, it's just astonishing that it's still ongoing. And as I say, that argument that's been built on is just completely baseless.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm looking at this case Cardiff have put forward, and I don't know whether they'll be successful or not, but you're right. Who's to say you would have scored the goals to keep them up? Who's to say that you wouldn't? I mean, put it this way, we've seen plenty of players signed for big money over the years who are strikers, who have got great records elsewhere, and then come to the Premier League and do absolutely nothing. So, it's completely hypothetical what Cardiff are saying, but I don't really care. I just think the squabbling between these two clubs is so unsavoury. A man's died and it affected these clubs so much. And for 5 years now, they've been squabbling over money. You would have thought that something like this may unite the two clubs, if anything, but it's done the complete and utter opposite. And it's led to this turf war on social media that I'm seeing between Cardiff fans and non-fans. It's not a good look for either club. And I thought this saga was over and done with after the most recent ruling before this, but it's clearly not. And I just want them to knock this on the head, because while one of the parties may financially benefit from this whole thing, they're both really dragging their reputations through the mud. And we'll just leave that there because I just don't want to talk about it anymore. We'll finish on some positive news. Justin Watford have made Tom Cleverley their head coach on a permanent basis. He's lost just one of his 7 games in charge since being appointed as the interim following the sacking of Valerian Ismail. And I think it's a move we both like, Justin. Am I right?
It really is. I think Tom Cleverley has been brilliant. And again, that one loss against Southampton was, a fairly dubious winning goal from Southampton very late in the game from him. So that game could have easily ended up in the draw if VAR was a thing in the Championship. But it's not. And Cleverley's got that mark against his name now. But look, yeah, he's been fantastic. There's been a lot of draws, but I think the key thing here is he's shored Watford up. The game plans, I think, are really intelligent, and they've not been an easy run of games either for Watford. They've had to play Preston, who are pushing for the playoffs, Ipswich pushing for automatics, Southampton pushing for automatics, Hull pushing for the playoffs, Leeds as well, West Brom. That run of games that he's had,
it's outrageous, isn't it?
It's ridiculous. But he's come away with just one defeat, and as I say, that defeat was dubious. I'm really, really... it's promising. Look, we have been here before where Watford have looked like they're turning a corner. We won't know until September what the attitude is like towards Cleverley. But I think the key things are, as I say, defensively they look good. Game plans are looking good. Got a young, vibrant manager who is well liked within the club. That's always good from the internal side and the political side of it within football clubs. And there's not been a heavy inkling of the team being on the beach either. They've really tried, which is Watford teams have passed, like this time last year, we're on the beach and done. So yeah, I think that's a big thing, and I'm really, really excited by it.
Yeah, well, he's been there for such a short period of time, but he's really brought the club together, hasn't he? There's been a growing divide between the supporters and ownership. Fans aren't best pleased with the hire and fire policy the club continues to pursue with, as well as the general direction the club is going in. But Tom Cleverley's a really popular character there, and he can reunite the place, as we have seen recently. He has drawn most of his games so far, but you're right, Justin, that run of games he has had is absolutely ridiculous, playing the likes of Ipswich, Leeds, Southampton, Hull, West Brom, Preston. It's unbelievable, isn't it? And for him to only have one loss in there, and that being, against Southampton through a 98th minute winner, which was a bit dubious, he's done a great job so far. And he has been giving it some big talk about his future in management, Justin. He told the BBC, "There is a lot of unfinished business for my playing career. That drives me forward with my coaching. It motivates me every day. I didn't achieve anything in the Champions League with Manchester United. The title, we lost to City. I came to Watford when they're in the Premier League. I retired as a player with them in the Championship. None of it sits right. I probably lacked ambition as a player, but as a coach, I'm very ambitious." Do you like that, Justin? Do you like that big chat?
Fucking hell. Yeah. I'm inspired. Let's take this podcast to the big time, Ryan. Let's go to the Premier League.
No. Yeah. You didn't accomplish anything in your playing career. You never won Derby Division 2 when you were a didn't, player. But didn't. Now we're yeah. taking this podcast to the big time because you lacked ambition as a player, but as yeah. a podcaster, you've got that ambition.
You know what? I did. I did lack ambition as a player. I could have played to the in Division 1 of the Tavs, the Taverners. I didn't. I'm absolutely taking this to the stratosphere, this podcast. Yeah.
You may have lacked ambition. You also lacked talent, but, you know, that's by the by. But you're now making up for it with your impact on the podcasting scene. But yeah, wow. Tom Cleverley, I'm glad they've gone with this. And hopefully he does well because he just seems like a really likeable chap as well. But there we go, ladies and gentlemen. This has been the Second Tier Podcast. And this has been the Midweek Show, where I've been talking about everything that's happened in the Championship over the past few days. And we'll be back again tomorrow with the preview show brought to you by SBK. So we bloody look forward to seeing you then. It's the second last game week, Justin, the penultimate game week of the Championship season. So we're going to make some predictions. We're putting our necks on the line and there's a hell of a lot at stake. So we bloody look forward to seeing you then. But this has been the Second Tier Podcast. I've been Ryan Dilks.
I've been Justin Peach.
And a big thank you for listening.
Second Tier is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.